G'day and welcome to another edition of Authorised, the podcast where writers speak. My name's Kevin Hillier, and a real treat for you this week, the terrific book, a very much Australian book and very much an Australian author, and a man whose face and name and voice you know very, very well in this edition of Authorised. All thanks to our very good friends at CSCG. Now, they're people you can trust with your finances, and that's the most trust you can give to a lot of people in this world, let's be honest, because you work hard for it and you want to see it perform for you. So as in the latter years of your life, when you get to the William McGuinness and Kevin Hillier ages, you've got something to look forward to. So if you want your financial goals to be realised, talk to my friends at CSCG. Give them a call, 9974833. They'll help you with superannuation, with financial planning, with business planning, if that's where you are. If you're lending, they've got all the answers for you. 9974833. William McGuinness is my guest for this edition of Authorised. It's his 13th book, and each one is just a rollicking little tale of adventure. This one, William gets into Aussie expressions, nicknames, mateship, growing up in Redcliffe in Queensland, some of his acting experiences. It's all there, and it is hilariously told, as only he can do, and he's always someone I very much look forward to picking up the phone and talking to, as I did for this edition of Authorised. Yeah, nah. Your 13th book. My God, how did that happen?
I don't know. Miracles do exist. I'm a bit of a battery again, I think. I just pop them out in between.
Well, otherwise
doing acting or playing bad golf.
For those people who have seen little bits and pieces in the book already, 13 books means it's 87 off 100, which is
rare. Oh, that's no bloody good. Up your bum. I don't want to hear any of that sort of talk. I don't like 87 is bad. That's bad luck. I'm touching a bit of wood.
Yes, exactly. So where did this, and I think this, the 87 thing actually is obviously, 87 is the Australian cricket team's bogey number.
Yeah. 13 from 100 on the magic ton.
So did the title of this book and the thought process of this book start with Travis Head?
Trav was just a handy light bulb moment. He got that century in the session in the first test at the Gabba in the last home Ashes series, and they were all over him like flies over a honey sandwich at a picnic. And he's such a great bloke, I reckon, Travis. He's like I'm sure in the past life he was Doug Walters.
Yes.
They were all over him saying, "You really attacked. You must be very happy with your game, Trav. You really went after them. You dominated out there." And Trav goes, look, I'm just happy to contribute." I thought that is a fantastically Australian phrase. There's nothing. People usually point to "yeah, nah" as an example of how odd and how quaint, especially people from overseas, Australians are when they communicate. But if you really think about it, it's one of the most straightforward, egalitarian, polite things. Yeah, I accept what you're saying, but nah, this is what I think. I love it. It's brief but to the point, but it's fantastic phrase and it's Australian.
Yeah, it permeates the sporting world, and maybe that's because I watch a lot of sportsmen being interviewed. But it permeates the sporting world to an annoying degree at times.
Well, you can have too much lemonade.
Yes,
as my father used to say, but doesn't sort of spoil how nice cold can of sass tastes. You're right. I mean, I guess it's one of those treading water conversational moments too, but I kind of love it because it screams to me Australian. And I love the way Australians, for people that are supposed to be bland and a little bit, people want to be dismissive of Australia. They just think bland, comfortable people. But I think we've got this colourful way of going about living, which really indicates that the world could do with a few more Australians, I reckon. I mean, the awfulness that's around in the world today, and we're not perfect, but it's a little bit of it's a unique place where due process by and large is followed and people are civil to each other. I mean, hopefully that doesn't change, but it's a global world and bad habits can be picked up. I know it can be annoying at times, but I love it. I glory in it. I think it's a wonderful Australian expression.
And the glory that you found in so many of your observations in this book, I mean, there's one where I think it was a mate's father yells out to the kid as he's running to the toilet, make sure you wipe your bum properly because your mother's sick of your Reg Grundys with more skid marks than Peter Brock's driveway.
He has to be a certain vintage, but he actually used Richard Widmark.
Ah, yes. Yes, the American
the
actor.
Which is rhyming slam, the old actor, and it's rhyming slang for skid marks. But we'd been out all morning, my mate. Well, I was about 12, 13. Would have been 12 last year of primary school in Queensland. We went out fishing, and the guy, the father, hardly spoke to us, so we were just sort of amusing ourselves. And it was as if he wanted to just have this man to the son talk. And he thought I may be a distraction because he was hosing down the boat as you do after you get it back in out of the water. And he didn't even call the boy by his name. He just said, "Now, boy, I've been meaning to talk to you." He was doing this. He had a cigarette. He was hosing down the titty. And he goes, "You've got to watch how you wipe your ass. Your mother's sick of picking up your head around these little boys, little marks. There's more skid marks than Alan Moffat's driveway." And that was it. To me, that's Shakespearean. I mean, I love all that stuff. Yes. I mean, I love rhyming slang. I love all that sort of typical Australianisms, but it's the way people reinvent the Australian language. I mean, you know, you can't say certain things you could when I was growing up, and that's good. That's the way we change, but you can say other things now. I mean, I kind of love that.
Yeah.
There's always the immortal conversation I heard when I was walking behind. I was going up to the news agency at some papers years ago where I used to live up in Footscray. And there were these two blokes, and they said, "Oh, wait a minute, I'll just get a stop off at the ATM and get some Russell Crowe." And I'd never heard that before, yeah. But that means Russell Crowe, dough, money, cash. And he says, "What do you need your cash for? You got your card?" And this guy said, "Oh, yeah, I just got to get some stuff from the baker, and he doesn't like cards." And the guy, then he goes, he's pulling at the back of his pants, and he said, "What's going on?" He said, "Oh, I've got a bit of Johnny Cash." So I thought, is that cash too? That money too, but it wasn't. It was a bit of a Johnny Cash. Well, you had a Pat Pooja, which was an Indian restaurant. Yeah, real ring of fire. You would need an Enigma code breaking machine to decipher that if you weren't Australian. Yeah. So I love that sort of nonsense. I mean, look, you know, we've got an end point, and we've got a, you know, we all reach an end point. And I, you know, the older I get, I mean, I'll be 60 this year. The older I get, the more I realise. This is a sort of brief ride, really, in perspective of things. But, you know, why we can't indulge in this pleasant nonsense that Australians call life and enjoy it as much as we sometimes do, and why we can't enjoy it all the time, you know, I don't know. I just think if we just concentrate on having a good time when we're walking upright, that'll be fantastic for everybody. But, you know, look, life comes up and bites in the bum in all different sorts of ways.
Yeah, very true. How did you manage to fit this in amongst what's been a pretty busy acting year for you with the Newsreader and NCIS Sydney?
Oh, well, you just sort of write. I write the same book, Kevin. You know, so I draw from the same well. But it was fun. It's like it's kind of fun when you go off acting, and you know, you can sort of pretend to be someone else and carry on like a pork chop. But you can sit down and get away from it all and just, you know, hit the keys on the laptop and rip out a book.
Does it flow out of you? Does it come? I mean, all these memories that you have from, you know, the days in Redcliffe growing up and footy things and acting things, do they store in there and come out easily?
Well, once you get on a roll, they sort of do, you know. I mean, everyone has a template, I guess, for the way they go about work, but it's sort of a hard. This was a funny old book to write, really, because I was writing a lot about people who have died, you know, and you sort of we hadn't seen for a long time, and you suddenly think, oh my God, that was such fun thinking about them. It's almost like you have a little dream, and you remember them, and then you sort of wake up and you know they're gone. And it's I don't want to carry on too much, but it's a bit like your heart does ache a little, and you think, oh God, you know, but then you realise you had such fun while you were with them, and in a way, that's kind of nice. But it's a bit of a wrench being a human being sometimes, and we all get them. You know, we all have those feelings of we're just passing through sooner or later in our life. But if you have fun time, it's such a glorious thing. I mean, when I think of my father, I mean, he's this man who cuts snake half the time.
Yeah.
But he wasn't really. He was just a bloke going about his life. It's just because he was a bit of a character or, you know, maybe I was – it's only sort of cottoned on to me that I was a bit of a, well, a clown, basically. I mean, like I went and got a perm once when I was supposed to get a short back and sides because I was sent home with a note from school saying, you know, this boy needs to have his hair cut. I won't be coming back to the school before it is. And my mum didn't have time to give me one of her homemade hand haircuts, you know. So I was sent with $10 down to this barber. But when I got to the barber in this arcade, he turned into a unisex hair salon. And lo and behold, was a girl who was an apprentice hairdresser there who I was in love with. And I'd never said boo to this girl. I'd just seen her roller skating at the roller drum. She was gorgeous, I thought. And she said to me, hello. She said, would you like a perm? And that was basically the... Well, that was our relationship. She gave me a perm. It took about 90 minutes, and I thought, I am in so much trouble. My head just exploded. And then she said, well, there you go. And that was the end of our relationship. And then I had to walk home. It cost about $27. So I had to say to the bloke around the place, listen, can I come back with the rest? He said, you're going to come back by the end of business. Yeah, okay. I'm thinking, how am I going to? And I went in, and my mother's there in the front kitchen. And she turns around and she says, oh, Jesus Christ! Screams. And my father comes running in because he's just doing what all Southeast Queensland fathers used to do back then, do a bit of work in the backyard. And there was a big bank of banana trees, so he had a machete. He came running in with a machete. He said, what is it, Chris? My mum's name was Iris. What is it, Chris? And she just pointed at me, and my old man just screamed and pointed the machete at me. And he said, Christ alive, boy! When I was your age, I was jumping out of planes to kill Germans. For what? You know, it was as if this mighty pause in the Second World War, this sort of major conflict of a common striving against real evil and fighting for the future had resulted in I was the future, this sort of gormless, acne-covered clown with a Bullens circus haircut panting at him. There was another time a kid said, I'll give you $10 if you drive my bike into Humpybong Creek. And I went, oh, yeah, I'll do that. And the kid ran off laughing, and this other kid came up crying with his big sister, and then his dad came, and I was in the middle of Humpybong Creek with his bike, and it wasn't his bike. It was the crying kid's bike, and I was trapped at Humpybong Creek. And then the old man went and got my old man, and my old man had to give him, I'll sort it out. You are a bloody clown, son. I love you, but you're a bloody clown.
He had some very good nicknames for you.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, my name's – I got a hyphenated name, Daryl William, because my mum was Welsh. The old man was Irish, so my mum wanted to call me Daryl, and she always said it's the Welsh way of spelling it, which doesn't make any difference. Once you're a Daryl, you're a Daryl. And then the old man was William, so my name is Daryl William. And, you know, my father used to call me – it's got shortened to Daryl for a while, but he used to call me Drillbit. You know, Daryl, Drillbit, come here. Drillbit. So I was Drillbit. Then I was Cabbage Head, Pie Can. The best one was Arse Part, I think, because, you know, yes. My brother, he used to call me and my brother Arse Part. And my brother said, why do you call us Arse Part? And the old man goes, because you're not good enough to be the whole arse, son. You're just that bit down the middle with all the crap down. I mean, look. That sounds like he's – but he was the most funny, loving – yeah, he was a bit volcanic, but he never ever touched any of his anger, never raised his hand in anger.
Yeah.
It was like that way of, you know, offhand nicknames and taking the mickey and just saying, you're all right, and I love you so much, I'm going to give you a couple of stupid names. It was totally offhand.
Yeah.
You know, my mum used to call me and my brother Kaka 1 and Kaka 2, you know, because when we were, you know, middle teenage, you know what boys are like in the middle teenagers, oh, my God, you're like crayfish, arms and legs and head full of nothing.
Yeah, true.
But she wasn't going, you know, you crayfish. She says, come on, Kaka 1, hurry up. Kaka 2, come on. And it was like said in a loving way, you know. So it was, that sort of stuff's a lot of fun. And my old man was great at giving people nicknames. I thought, one of the stories I still laugh about, Kevin, and it's a really unique example, I think, of how people go about communicating in Australia. He had this hire business, my dad, and he had this old customer, Case Anchors, who was a house painter, was a Dutch bloke, and my mum used to call him the clipper rounding the cape full of wind. You know, he was this big guy in these billowing painter's overalls.
Yeah.
And the old man, he said that he didn't like dogs, Mr. Anchors. He liked little pug dogs, but he didn't like our Kelpies and cattle dogs. He just called, they're too barking too much, you know. They bark off over there. I don't like them. So you can, I will toot on my horn. Then you will know that it's me. You can call the dogs and we can sit down and have a cup of coffee and do some business. And my old man went, yeah, of course, Case. That was all right for a while. But after a while, you'd hear this toot, 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 toot. My old man would go, oh, for Christ's sake, the bloody Pharaoh, grab the dog. Get the bloody dog, you know. So it turned into some scene from some awful war movie. I get the bloody dog, action stations. So everyone had to stop and go get the dogs. And the dogs thought it was a game, so they're running around barking. So it increased my father's irritation with all this. And one morning, he heard this, get the bloody Pharaoh, grab the dog. William, what do you call it? Grab the bloody dog. And I get the dogs, I put them in the back, you know, we've got the laundry, the back kitchen, the laundry. And they have their cup of tea, they're their business, they go. And I say to my dad, why do you call Mr. Anchors the Pharaoh? And my father talks to me like I'm an idiot. What do you mean? Why do you call Mr. Anchors the Pharaoh? You have got no bloody idea of history. Why do we send you to that bloody school, boy? And I'm saying, Dad, I don't understand. Why do you call him the Pharaoh? He said, are you an idiot? So he talks to me like I'm one. He sits in his car and he beeps his horn. He's a Pharaoh. I just shake my head. He says, buddy, no. Tooting car man, the Pharaoh.
So beautiful
that is
logic.
One of the classiest, craziest nicknames. And today, I mean, I do get. I get a salvo, a symphony of beeps when I drive. And whenever I get a blast of horn, I just sort of wave. And I just say, hey, young Pharaoh, tooting car man. It's a cracker, isn't it?
It is. It's a beautiful way of the development of a nickname is there's one that you talk about in the book, a bloke who finished up being called The Fly. Who knew nicknames were evolutionary, but they actually are.
Oh, there's a story. And so many people with so many great nicknames.
Yes.
You know, The Fly was great because he was a kid that came a little bit after me in senior, but he was new, but quiet, very smart, very good at maths, didn't sort of really know too many of the other lads. He's quiet, but his name was Andrew. And he didn't have a confirmation name. It was just like, oh, his parents taught at Queensland Uni. And they were English. That was supposed to explain why they called him Andrew. I just nodded. But so he got called Andrew Squared for a while.
Yep.
Then he got called New York.
Yep.
So good they named him twice. Then he got called the Big Apple. Then he got called Apple. Then he got called Fruit Fly. And then some kid, the Ball Burt, called him The Fly. And then when he said The Fly, he just turned and looked like he was an action hero. I went to one reunion. I've only been to one reunion, but he was there. And he said, you boys, wouldn't you name me The Fly? And we all looked away when we heard it. That was the joke. He said, that was the making of me. You know, my kids found out what my nickname was at high school. And they actually thought I was half cool. And then he's an accountant. But he said, Dad, did they call you The Fly? And he looked up and he looked away and he did the head turn. He said, you've got to do the head turn. Yes, they did call me The Fly, head turn. And I kind of love that. Like, he's obviously a new kid in a new environment. You know, he was bullied, but it was like a welcoming to the tribe sort of thing. Now, I can be a bit tricky, but I always think of that when he got his nickname and he enjoyed it and it was never having a go at him. I think that's a real lesson in sort of getting along and, you know, becoming a part of a community. You know, it doesn't work out for everybody, but I kind of love that. And the fact that his kids, to this day, apparently still call him The Fly and do the head turn.
There you go.
It's sort of beautiful.
we discover a few things about you in this book that you reveal, things like your love of jumpers and cardigans and your fact that you don't like needles.
No, I hate needles. I can't stand them. I've never been able to, I don't know. I hate them. It's, I don't know. Okay, look, I'm starting to sort of shake my hand. Just dismissively. I can't stand them. He used to get a painkiller when he played rugby, and I used to sort of jump up and down, and you know, people didn't know what was going on. It's like when we had to have vaccinations, you know, they used to call it the jab.
Yep.
Like the fly, it turns the jab. You know, and I just think that calling it the jab's not going to fool me. I know it's a bloody needle, and I don't like them. I just don't like, well, quite frankly, between you and me, Kevin, getting pierced by a metal object.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. We're not likely to see you have any tattoos anytime soon, I wouldn't have thought.
No, yeah, that was another classic, you know, my old band did like tattoos from a different generation. Not many people did have tattoos. It sort of was a statement about the sort of person you were. Now everyone has got tattoos, and you know, they might be even going out of fashion. I don't, you know, to each their own. But I remember my brother having a Sunday lunch, and he said to Dad, I'm going to get a tattoo. And the old man said, he said, you get a tattoo, you're not coming in this house. The only people who get tattoos are pirates and returned men, meaning a returned serviceman. Yep. And one of my sisters goes, Dad, you're a returned man? And yes, sir, indeed I am. Happy to have served. And then there's this pause. And my other sister asks, have you got a tattoo? And the old man goes, of course I have. Pause. Eating where? Just above my ass. Laugh at its core. It says exit only. That's completely incorrect. But it was the mid-70s. And I didn't even understand what was going on. I just said that everyone was laughing. I thought, oh, I'll laugh along too. But I just knew it was fun. But my mum did say, because I grew up in Southeast Queensland at the time, and, you know, they were developing everything left, right and centre and all these sprawling motorways, and they got so far ahead of themselves. Bruce Highway, there was a Bruce Highway on-ramp. There was this sign. They made so many mistakes building, and this sign said, wrong way, go back. And my mother said, oh, that's funny, colleague, but you should have that sign you like, wrong way, go back. My old man nodded and said, very funny, love, but too many letters, too many tears.
And a wonderful turn of phrase, your dad.
Ah, yeah, he was. They were both. Well, they just both loved. I don't know, just loved being alive. I think they loved singing and yelling and carrying on. It was a fun house to grow up in. I know that much. And yeah, they were. I mean, the more you, as I say, you grow older, you just remember what fun they were to be around. I sort of thought when you were a kid, it's so hard to think they're not going to be around. But then, you know, I don't want to get too mortal, but then, you know, we've all got to drop off the perch sooner or later.
Yes, and you was talk about that, dropping off the perch and the various ways that happens. You mentioned some really colourful Australian characters like Gough Whitlam, like Russ Hinds, you know, and a lovely story about Tom Burns and Russ Hinds and about...
And makeshift or blokes, like I tried to write the idea of what's a good bloke, because I think that's, you know, fundamentally he's a good bloke. And you think, oh my God, if you're a good bloke, you can get away with anything. But what is a good bloke? What is a good man? And, you know, you can find examples of that from the strangest of places. And in that relationship between Al Kinsey and Tommy Burns, there was, you know, I like Tom Burns. I mean, you know, my dad, but, you know, for those of you listeners who don't actually know who Tommy was, he was an opposition leader in Joe Bjelke-Petersen's Queensland. And my dad, who was into Labor politics, said he's the most honest bloke I've ever met in politics, but he's the strangest bastard under the sun. I mean, He's the sort of bloke, Tommy, who'll go and pick a fight with his own shadow just to prove a point. And then he doesn't even know what point he is trying to prove. He was a really feisty, fierce sort of guy, but just a really nice human being. I think, you know, he used to have this runabout. He'd get out in Moreton Bay, came from the other end of the bay to us, and he used to call his runabout the electorate.
Yeah.
So he just cracked the sads with everything and said, I'm staying in the electorate. But he needed to talk to Mr. Burns. People would ring up and they'd say, we need to speak to Mr. Burns. And his staff would go, oh, we're so sorry, he's out in the electorate.
It's just a wonderful way of getting away with it, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, people think that life is pretty, in Australia, pretty level and even. And I guess that's what we like to think. And there's lots of ups and downs. People who miss out and people who get a bit left behind and, you know, especially when people going on about the cost of living, you know, and all that sort of stuff. it's hard to realise that there's a depth and complexity to Australian society, I think, and a culture in a way. And I love the way we go about living, by and large. I love it. I do. I think it's so much fun being Australian. I mean, that's what I think I try to say about this book. Yep. I mean, we're not perfect. We don't get everything always right. But it's just a bloody good thing being an Australian.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be an Australian like me to have a good time, you know, like some old Spanish galleon wreck of a middle-class Australian or some old boring white guy banging on. You can be an Australian of all different varieties, shapes, sizes, whatever, however you want to identify yourself. And I kind of think that it's precious. You know, I kind of really, you know, I don't know, I really, no, I don't want to sound like a bloody idiot, but I kind of dig being Australian. Is that too corny?
Probably. No, I totally agree with you. We have a wonderfully laconic way of looking at life that I think is that serves us well.
Yeah, I remember when I was... when I got COVID, when I was doing a play, and I had to go off to Zabini's, and I thought it's a bit of a deal, you know. I remember when, you know, Tom Hanks got COVID, and everyone goes, "Oh no, not Tom Hanks!"
Yeah,
it was a couple of years into it. Everyone goes, "Oh, yeah." Instead of it sort of being ushered into a special area, I just had to sit on an upturned milk crate while I got my nose wiped.
Yeah.
It was the place where the ambulances come in. There's a bloke not far from the smoking area, and there's a bloke in a knacker-dacker, you know, singlet, and he's got an energy drink, and he's looking at me. He's smoking it. Goes, "Get a bit of the spicy cough, big fella." I went, "Yeah, I think so." And it's paused, and this bloke goes, "Nice day for it."
and that's what we do. That's how we handle everything.
I know. Nice day for it. Yeah. Oh yeah. It's fantastic. I mean, you know, and I'm sure that other people maybe communicate in a more sophisticated and, I don't know, descriptive way. But I kind of love that sort of stuff. I love it. It makes me sort of, you know, and this is the land of William.
Yeah, and if you want to learn about the Launton Dogs, the Twin Towns, Pizza Feet, and a whole lot more, have a read of this book, because it is a very, very entertaining ride that you take the reader on. It's a ripper.
Oh, you're a good man, Kevin.
Now, where do I sign up for the COFA? I want to.
You want to be a coffer too, a Conservative Old Farts Association?
Yes,
well, we're going to be meeting at the Sunners Community Hall. I'll send you an invitation.
Now,
I
have to tell you that you gave my household the television highlight of the year in the newsreader. when your character Lindsay Cunningham sang the Chucky song.
Well, yes, I just thought that's a nice show to be a part of. You can just try things like that.
Yeah.
It sort of worked. And then I said, "Is that too much?" And then the director of the film said, "Do it again."
No, it was an absolute highlight of the viewing year. That I mentioned earlier, you've had a busy year acting, doing Newsreader and doing NCIS Sydney. What have you got coming up, much?
I've got, funnily enough, I'm doing... I've just started doing the third season of The Newsreader.
Oh,
so I'm
good.
Doing that. And then we'll swing into another season of that NCIS Sydney,
Didn't you do yourself a fairly severe injury, stunt-work-wise, in NCIS Sydney?
I ruptured my Achilles. It was a season end. It could have been a season-ending injury,
oh,
Kevin.
Goodness me.
You can say, true Redcliffe Dolphin or Western Bulldog fashion, I had a needle, I had a jab, and I got back out there. I had a bit of a stroke of a magic sponge. I told someone I did it doing a stunt, like, you know, the helicopter. My toddler son had to jump out, and he fell, and I had to grab him, and then the helicopter was landing, so I had to brace with my foot, and then a gust of wind dragged the helicopter along the deck of the ship, and that's when, like, my Achilles ruptured. What actually happened was, you know, I was going to get a cup of coffee in the slippers and I just slipped over. That's how I did my Achilles, you know, an old Cooper's disease.
Yeah.
But I had a moon boot on, and I had a moon boot on for the last 6 weeks of the shoot. So that's like 2 episodes. And they said, don't worry, we'll take it out digitally.
All right.
And they said, can you fix the walk? And I went, no. Nah.
Just
walking around like a large sort of hazmated Ahab looking for the white whale. But it was a lovely bunch of people and nice job. And, you know, it's just a different show than the newsreader, but that's okay. You know, if you're lucky enough to do different sorts of jobs, it's fun and it's, you know, proven popular enough to get another run. So that's good. And, you know, I like, I love the guy is the showrunner, the producer, Morgan O'Neill. He's a riot. He's a great bloke. And, you know, and they're all the cast are fun. So, and look, you know, it's sort of funny to actually, I'll tell you what, Kevin, you know, you're showing your age when you can't remember a suspect's name. And I kept on saying the wrong guy, and Todd LaFrance says, what are you saying that name for? And I said, well, isn't that his name? Arthur John Stoddard? He said, no. I said, it's not Stoddard, Glenn Storick. I went, oh, God, what am I going? But I kept on saying Arthur John Stoddard, and I suddenly realised, I said to Todd, I went, Jesus Christ. That's a bloke I arrested on Blue Heelers 27 years ago.
Ah, goodness me. There you go.
I mean, it's terrible. If you solve enough crime, yeah, they all
mesh into one.
Meld into one. After John Stoddard. He was a shearer. He wasn't a Navy SEAL. He was a shearer in Mount Thomas.
What about another book? Are you working on ideas for the next one?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, I kind of like to. And look, as I said, mate, I don't want to sort of paint myself as some sort of, you know, I just pull it out my behind. But I kind of like them. I know they're not the best books in the world. They're not sort of Nobel Prize winning, or probably even got a prize at the Redcliffe Show. But you know, I kind of like writing them, and I kind of like when people enjoy them.
Yeah.
It's like a little gift of yourself to other people. That's, yeah, I think I will try and write another one. I mean, yeah, there's no accounting for taste.
As always, it's an absolute delight to catch up with you, mate.
You're a good man, Kevin Hillier.
Look after yourself and, you know, don't go and get coffee in your slippers anymore.
Yeah, well, I'll just do stunts on helicopters. They tell me it's much more safe.
Fair enough.
All right, brother. Mate, go the dogs, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to a good year. Thanks, mate. Thanks for your time.
You're a good man, Kevin. See ya.
Well, thanks to William. Yeah, nah, it's a terrific book. You'll love it. If you're looking for a laugh and for a celebration, as it says on the book, a celebration of life and the words that make us who we are, it's beautifully done. You'll absolutely love it. And I'd like to thank William for being on the program and look forward to whatever else he has coming up, whether it's acting or it is in the literary world. He's bloody good at all of it. It's always a delight. Thanks for listening to this edition of Authorised. Plenty more other terrific authors and great stories to tell. Where you found this podcast, you'll find a lot more. And thanks once again to our podcast partners, CSEG. They are the people to talk to about your money and about your financial goals. 9974833. Till next time, I'm Kevin Hillier. Read a book. Have some fun. You'll enjoy it.